Show. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and it is cussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Here we are. It is the third day of April 2014. This is Thorn in the Side Thursday on the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where you'll find a broad selection of news stories from around the world for your perusal on a daily basis. You'll also find the media player kindly installed by webmaster John Fox. And, well, John's all too well. He's the, I guess you'd say, the technical advisor. He's got a lot of hats, John does. You'll also find there entrance to the chat room, and the chat room is beginning to fill up with good evening, Benny. Good evening, Blue Ape. Good evening, Jan. Good evening, Waggy. And, of course, our moderator, Sparky. More folks will be wandering by. If you've never wandered by, well, by golly, you should. At least during live program hours, namely right now, 6:02 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 3:02 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. It's a wonderful time that we have in there. It absolutely is. Also at the at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, you'll find the PayPal button and the traditional mail address for those of you who prefer to help support the program that way. We try to raise $150 an evening to keep this whole affair afloat. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, and no, this is Thorn in the Side Thursday, and this is from what I can tell, just doing my reading for today's program. This is going to be like a bare-legged wander through the blackberry briar patch. I mean, we got a lot of thorns out there, and we may as well get started, right? Yeah. But where? Oh, that's always the question. Where? Now, the shooting rampage by the lawful, awful gun owner broke during the program last night. We didn't talk a lot about it. Of course, there's a lot of talk going on about it on the for-profit media. But what more is there really to be said when any of these things takes place? The other side has won. This country is gunned up to the point that it could actually commit its own suicide just with the guns that are extant and sold on a daily basis in this country. Think about that. We have enough guns for every human being in this country to commit suicide. Or enough guns for every human being in this country to shoot somebody else until we're down to the last person. And then, well, whatever. This is, the other side's won. There's going to be no reform of the gun laws in this country, at least not in this country as it is currently constituted. Because, well, you know, the National Rifle Association, thanks to things like the ruling yesterday in McCutcheon and Citizens United, the National Rifle Association has more speech than you do. They can speak more loudly, more profoundly than you can. And when the National Rifle Association speaks, what they say is, we want more dead fifth graders. We want more dead first graders. We want more dead moviegoers. We want more dead at the shopping mall, at the skating rink, at the amusement park, at the high school graduation. We want more dead all over America because Wolverines! They're gonna, we're protecting freedom, glory, amen. Guns, 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 guns. You got a gun? I got a gun. We've all got guns. Reminds me of that line from The Lion in Winter where Eleanor of Aquitaine, played by Katharine Hepburn, says, I've got a knife, you've got a knife, he's got a knife, we all carry knives. It's the 11th century, we're all barbarians. Hello? Hello, 11th century, 21st century, 1,000 years apart, not much different. I think you guys can sit down and talk. Yeah. And, of course, because, I mean, this has to have some sort of a thorn in the side Thursday tie-in, doesn't it? Some sort of an angle or something. Right? Sure. What could that angle possibly be? I bet you already know. Let's check in with the Christian organization, the American Family Association, and see, well, you know, they favor guns for Jesus, but let's find out what would have most likely stopped that lawful gun owner from doing what he did.
I absolutely agree, you know, that we ought to renew our commitment as a people to the Ten Commandments. And you think, Lynn, about the command, thou shalt not murder. I mean, what if this guy had grown up hearing that at home, hearing that at school, because the Ten Commandments would be posted on the walls of his school, hearing that in Sunday school on Sunday, hearing that in the sermon on Sunday.
Can I point out that the Fort Hood shooter yesterday was a former member of the United States military? And that if he had been subjected to thou shalt not kill day in and day out, and just the straight up thou shalt not kill, okay? We're not talking about thou shalt not kill unless you decide that, unless a semi-literate barbarian president who wasn't elected in the first place decides to send a bunch of America's youth off to fight a really stupid illegal war in Iraq. I mean, because the thou shalt not kill part, well, it doesn't have caveats. I mean, we had to wait for the church to invent just war and crap like that because the just war doctrine isn't there in the words of Jesus or anything. Put up thy sword. Those that live by the sword shall die by the sword. And oddly enough, you can do a search and replace with put up thy gun. Those who live by the gun shall die by the gun. You know, of course, that this is Brian Fisher. Stanford University gave him a degree. Son of a gun.
I mean, repeatedly being reminded that God said, thou shalt not murder.
Doesn't seem to have done much for the president that this guy admired so much. Doesn't seem to have done much for George Bush. Didn't do a damn thing for Dick Cheney. Didn't do anything for Don Rumsfeld, didn't do anything for Paul Wolfowitz, didn't do anything for Condi Rice, didn't do anything for Colin Powell, didn't do anything for anybody who insisted on producing the slaughter in Iraq that wound up with in excess of 1 million innocent civilian deaths. Thou shalt not kill. And I'm pretty sure, being the good Methodist that he was, that dim leader, George Bush, was passing familiar with that, and I got to think that having been raised in the church in Alabama, that kind of sleazy rice, which goes great with kind of sleazy chicken, probably had a passing familiarity with thou shalt not kill. Texas, Alabama, you can't swing. You can't swing your semi-automatic weapon around without hitting the Ten Commandments somewhere. So, okay, if only the Ten Commandments, right? And then everybody would be just fine, and we wouldn't have a Fort Hood shooting. But the right wing has yet to reach consensus on exactly why we have these things. naturally, the place you go for right-wing analysis and the development of right-wing talking points and right-wing memes, the place you go for that is Radio TV Rwanda. Yeah. Let's check in with Radio TV Rwanda contributor, former FBI agent Jonathan Gilliam. He seems to have an idea on what brings this kind of stuff to fruition. And granted, it's not the Second Amendment, and it's not a gun crazy culture, and it's not the fact that we have inadequate treatment for people who had their lives ruined and their brains harmed, serving in George W. Bush's filthy little illegal war in Iraq. No, it's not any of that. No, and this interview is being conducted by the Hannity job, that life support system for a haircut. Let's find out now.
To our panel once again, as we're joined by our good friends. KT, one of the things, you passed me a note, and it really shocked me.
Yeah.
Because by all indications, what we're talking about here is that we have a soldier, served 4 months in Iraq, mm-hmm. not as long as maybe some of the others that did year-long deployments and multiple deployments, underdiagnosis for PTSD, from being diagnosed with PTSD, mm-hmm. but underdiagnosis, being treated for mental health issues, anxiety, depression. And you pointed out these statistics that you just handed me. Yes. Why don't you explain what that is?
These are stunning, and it shows you that there is a ticking time bomb of mental health issues in our military. Over one-third of veterans have friends who have committed suicide. Half of all veterans have thought about suicide.
Gee, I wonder why. War, as William Tecumseh Sherman noted, is hell, and that's under the best of circumstances. When you take the soldiery and you send them out to do filthy, filthy, ungodly, illegal war crimes kind of business, there's a multiplier effect. And do you remember when George W. Bush was president and one of his budgets zeroed out the traumatic brain injury research project at the Centers for Disease Control? Because I do.
Two-thirds of veterans are not getting the mental health treatment they feel they need. 50% of veterans wait 2 months for initial mental health evaluations.
You actually got this from our own brain room.
Our own brain room, yeah.
We have a brain room at Fox, which means we have a bunch of computers.
A lot of smart people are looking at this.
Very smart people, yeah. But go ahead.
But the statistics are staggering.
That's staggering. I mean, that's breathtaking.
And, you know, veterans wait months. Sometimes the average waiting time to get your benefits if you're leaving the military, 300 days. So some people are waiting more than a year to get their benefits.
Look, as Jennifer Griffin was reporting,
and we all understand that when she says benefits, I mean, she's not talking about welfare or anything, because, you know, welfare bad. But let's go on. I want to hear from former FBI agent expert Gilliam. Gilliam, is that his name? Gilliam? Yes, Jonathan Gilliam. There is balm in Gilliam.
She pointed out at this point, there's no indication the shooter was motivated by any religiously fueled ideology. Okay, it appears mental health issues. Jonathan, you heard those statistics.
Right.
We have ticking time bombs on these bases now. The second time this has happened at Fort Hood, one ideologically driven. In this case, we assume at this moment that it was more mental health related.
Two things come to my mind immediately when I hear these statistics. One is a political thing, and the other one is a leadership problem. The political thing is, why is it that we're not spending more tax dollars on veterans and their families' welfare?
Why don't you ask the Republican House of Representatives that? Why don't you ask the Republicans and six Democrats in the United States Senate that, the former FBI agent Gilliam? You know, ask my senator, Joe Manchin, allegedly a Democrat. Why? Ask the Republican Party that voted as a block against an expansion of VA benefits. Ask them. Ask Mitch McConnell. Ask Senator Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III of Alabama. Why? But this is, of course, Radio TV Rwanda, and such questions will never be posed because, after all, you've already heard it. There's a leadership problem. Who could that possibly be? possibly be?
Than we are on the welfare for people in this country who do nothing to earn their citizenship. Nothing.
Wait, what? Okay, we're going to back up because I interrupted that. That needs to be that deserves to be heard in toto.
Religiously fueled ideology. Okay, it appears mental health issues. Jonathan, you heard those statistics.
Right.
We have ticking time bombs on these bases now. The second time this has happened at Fort Hood, one ideologically driven. In this case, we assume at this moment that it was more mental health related.
Two things come to my mind immediately when I hear these statistics. One is a political thing, and the other one is a leadership problem. The political thing is, why is it that we're not spending more tax dollars on veterans and their families' welfare than we are on the welfare for people in this country who do nothing to earn their citizenship?
Who do nothing to earn their citizenship? Son of a gun. Earned citizenship. That's rather a fascist little notion, isn't it? Well, yes, as a matter of fact, it is. Earned citizenship. And of course, we're robbing Paul to pay Peter because Peter had a sword. You got that? You know, it's all those useless eaters out there. But we've already cut the food stamp budget to the point that we're talking about a dollar a day for people now. Interesting, isn't it? It's the useless eater's fault. That's why this guy got hold of a firearm, which one can get as easily in Texas as one can get a gumball from a vending machine in the grocery store. But it's those poor's fault. Got it? But wait, I still want to hear about the leadership problem.
Nothing. And the other one, from a leadership point of view, why is a lieutenant general coming on and saying that we have police officers, we have certain response units on this base that will respond to this? And when somebody asks him a question about everybody being armed, why are they so comfortable, these executives in the military, so comfortable with sending men and women over to die for freedom and then bringing them back home and saying, look, you're not responsible enough?
Because military bases would be ever so much safer if everybody who comes back, who maybe has, I don't know, undiagnosed PTSD, is armed to the teeth. What a great idea. Are they called spirochetes? When those little corkscrew worms from tertiary syphilis that eat your brain, is this what it sounds like when they've really, really gotten a hold of you? But so we've only got a couple of working theories so far. But we all know, don't we? We all know whose fault the shooting at Fort Hood. Really, we know who's really at fault. We know whose fault it really is, don't we? Well, if we don't, by God, Steve Doocy does.
So who is Ivan Lopez? We know that he served 4 months over in Iraq. We know that he was being treated on some level with behavioral and mental health issues. We're about to find out the role of PTSD in this.
That's right. He actually had a self-reported traumatic brain injury, important to note there, under diagnosis. He was undergoing treatment, though, for depression and anxiety. As Ainsley pointed out, was married actually twice with a kid.
Yeah, the Associated Press is reporting this morning that he did seek counseling. While being evaluated for PTSD, they still had not arrived at any sort of diagnosis about it. And Ed was mentioned earlier, he reported that he had a brain injury that had not been confirmed yet. Keep in mind, it was 5 years ago at Fort Hood that what was then considered workplace violence, even though the guy, Nadal Hassan, came out and started shooting, was screaming Allahu Akbar. Now we're faced with something very similar, but this looks a lot like workplace violence. As we've heard so far this morning, it doesn't sound like it was terrorism. They don't have anything to believe about that.
And you can almost hear how bummed out Steve Doocy is about that fact. yes, Marty, I must inflict this upon us.
But yet, 5 years later, after a lot of promises that something would be done, and this has happened again, somebody who was shot 5 years ago had this observation on our program about an hour ago.
Right now in the military, we are over 150,000 mental health care professionals behind the power curve where we need to be for the current fighting force. That's for all components. And I don't want it to be where if you have a service member that has PTSD or TBI to look upon as if we're a threat. We need to give these veterans the help that they need and not put them on a waiting list. We are trained to...
Well, yeah, because from the waiting list to the death panel, yeah, there you go. We know where this is going, don't we?
To be able to operate these weapons and make good decisions with the weapons. And as I stated before, guns don't kill people, people kill people. But if you are allowed to carry the weapons...
But people with guns kill people a lot more effectively than people without guns. I mean, can we just, can we have that little postulate to the theorem? Or could that maybe even be axiomatic?
On the base, that's a deterrent.
Sure, and that deterrent was not until too late there. We did hear that heroic story of the female officer there. That was Sergeant Alonzo Lunsford, who survived the attack after being shot seven times in 2009. But there you have our soldiers not being able to arm themselves still. If they have a weapon, they are to register it within 5 days of purchase and obtaining it. Mm-hmm. But then that must be stored away in these lockers so that it cannot be carried on their person, therefore leaving them vulnerable, as many say. This is a quote from a Fort Hood employee about just that.
He says, when will they allow those who have concealed weapon permits to carry them on post? We don't have a way to protect ourselves. We are all hostages on the post. And you talk about...
Yeah, there are no Wolverines at Fort Hood. Because if only George Zimmerman had been at Fort Hood with his concealed carry, none of this ever would have happened.
At a Fort Hood that has 41,000 who are going to be guarded, I guess, by MPs. In this case, this woman who had a gun just...
MPs. Which, of course, stands for military police. Are the police force on military installations, and they are charged with maintaining order. Because sometimes, as much as we would like to think that we are one big happy family, some people who have been subjected to military training of varying degrees and sorts and kinds, sometimes they don't get along so well. And you know what? When somebody comes stumbling out into the street drunker than Adam's off ox, and the MPs get called, you know what the last thing the MPs want to confront? Said drunken soldier armed to the teeth. Because, you know, that whole Wolverines factor can get out of hand after you've got a fifth of rot gut whiskey in you. You know, the cheap stuff. Or maybe the good stuff. Who knows? Either way, booze is booze. And the last thing in the world, because, you know, remember, our soldiers are allowed to drink, they're just not allowed to, right, because they get piss tested for that. But they can get, and maybe it would be a better thing. But no, these goobs want all the soldiers carrying weapons, drunk, sober, what have you, so they can protect freedom. Do go on.
The presence of her with a gun had him make a move and kill himself.
Sure.
Because he was on his way, it seems as though, to another mass shooting.
We had Judge Napolitano on about 20 minutes ago. He talked about how in the 70s, when he was doing basic training at Fort Knox, Tennessee, they all were sidearms.
Wait, stop. But time. Time out, Jack. Okay. Time out. Now, I agree that I am not an absolute expert at geography by any stretch of the imagination. Is there a Fort Knox, Tennessee? I'm just curious. Has there ever been a Fort Knox, Tennessee? Was there a Fort Knox, Tennessee at some time in the past? But it has... Because it is in Kentucky, isn't it? I mean, I've got a neuron left, a little old brain cell that's got a flashing neon light around it that says, yes, Fort Knox is in Kentucky. These people are idiots.
In the Bill Clinton administration, they decided on base men and women who were trained in firearm safety and how to handle a gun could not carry them. It's interesting, and as you look at a live shot there at Fort Hood, and we're waiting for any new developments down there, Gateway Pundit, which is a way right-leaning blog, what they write this morning is, the Obama administration is responsible for this mass shooting. They witnessed this before. They didn't learn a thing. Gun-free zones are right. Death zones. It is time to stand up to the lunacy.
Well, the military should be making public statements about this, too. They should be leading the charge there, and they should have done a whole elaborate...
This entire discussion, and the next thing you got somebody leading a charge. They cannot get away from the eliminationist rhetoric. It's like mother's milk to them. Oh, my God. Like I said, it's going to be kind of a wander through the blackberry brambles this evening. We don't even have a right good start on this yet. We've just got one little moment of stupid we're dealing with so far. Irish Dave pointing out Ivan of Fort Hood was being jerked around so the diagnoses could be personality disorder and escape obligation for VA care because troops are assets and veterans are like, you know, liabilities. Oh, there's a ton of truth inside that. Ivan, but wait. Radio Rwanda has dropped the ball. Has no one noticed that this guy's name is Ivan? I mean... People named Ivan are often friends with people named Vladimir and Mikhail. Russians. This was probably the advance force of bare-chested, bare-shirted Vladimir Putin trying to annex Texas. Oh, my God. Ron and Raleigh. Earned citizenship? Sounds like Starship Troopers, where only those that serve in the military can be citizens, whereas everyone else are residents and can't vote. Don't worry, we're on the way. We'll get there yet. By the way, Jack in Shreveport pointing out the place where the now deceased shooter, in this case... got his firearms was called Guns Galore. I think we could do well just to take out the AL and just call it Guns Gore. By the way, and Jack notes, by the way, background checks might have been nice. And Michael pointing out, going all the way back to our Brian Fisher segment, did I mishear? Did Brian Fisher edit the commandment from kill to murder? What the? He's editing the word of God to his liking? Yeah, he is. I mean, it is the inerrant, literal truth written by God Almighty, him or herself. Well, I mean, come on, himself. We're talking about a patriarchy here, for Christ's sakes. And it cannot be edited unless you are Brian Fisher and you know the mind of God. Michael continues, also, is he seriously alleging that the shooter, by not having the Ten Commandments, Brian Fisher version, tattooed on the inside of his eyelids, must have never heard that murdering was, you know, frowned upon, like it was a totally unfamiliar concept to him? Right. Because, see, that's the way it is here in America. I mean, we don't have the Ten Commandments posted by every stop sign at every intersection on every stoplight. We don't have it posted right by the menu on the cafeteria. Carrot salad, thou shalt not kill. Green leafy tossed salad, thou shalt have no other gods before me. Pudding, honor thy father and thy mother. Yeah, see, if only it was all over the place. Because, see, nobody but fundamentalist evangelicals can understand that for one human being to kill another human being is wrong. Because, see, the rest of us can't possibly have morals because we don't worship a God who doesn't punish people whose daughters get them drunk and then get pregnant by them. But yet if the guy's wife, who maybe could have kept the daughters from raping daddy, if she turns around and looks back at the burning city, oh, pillar assault time. Yeah, those are the people that have the morals. An interesting observation coming in from our buddy Steve. Bob, I've been thinking about some stuff this week that you've talked about. I know it's not directly on subject today as I'm listening, but it has been on my mind. I was thinking about the bankruptcy case of Arbeitmarkt Freedom Industries and the fact that the former CEO, Gary Southern, wants his legal fees paid for and that the victims of this will receive nothing. I know I've written about this several times, but this really began to hit me again. Think about this. Every time we pay a parking ticket, we pay more in restitution than this guy will ever pay for poisoning the water of 300,000 people, not to mention the hundreds of thousands who will suffer down the road, who are the offspring and family members of these 300,000 poisoned people. Every time we pay a parking ticket, we pay more restitution than Dick Cheney will for causing the murder of a million human beings, the destruction of an entire country, the destruction of countless artifacts from the earliest days of the civilization of the human species, not to mention the displacement of 5 million refugees from Iraq. Bob, I have to admit something. I'm really sick and tired of this. I don't mean this in the normal sick and tired way. I mean that this has made me nearly an anarchist. I've almost come to the conclusion that there is no such thing as democracy, at least not on any large scale, that it just isn't possible, that the thing called government can only take on a life of its own and oppress people if it is constituted to govern more than a small town. The only way I'm beginning to realize that any kind of democracy or republic or whatever you want to call it can work is if everyone knows everyone else in the universe where people can vote. My conclusion? I just want to be left alone. I'm willing to forego police, fire, trash, roads, everything, because I'm sick and tired. Does this sound an awful lot like libertarianism? It sure does. Do I hate that I've nearly come to this conclusion? I sure do. Truly, I believe that no man is an island. However, I've come to true governments lead quickly to tyranny and oppression. I hate the fact that reform is not possible. I hate the fact that justice in the larger sense doesn't seem possible. And I can't delude myself with the silly notion about the arc of history bending toward justice. It doesn't. The massacres just get larger and the famines are bigger. The only way we can have justice is to personally know the people who have committed crimes or to know the victims. Not one of us knows Dick Cheney. Not one of us or few of us knows an Iraqi or Afghani who lost family members from our murderous escapades. For that reason, it's just too distant for us to get too angry and worked up about it. We all have food to put on our tables, bills to pay, clothing to buy, and shelter to procure. Without a direct impact from these crimes, we don't seem to be really motivated to do anything other than scream about it. It sucks feeling that so much is so futile, and history seems to lead inexorably to that conclusion. What's the solution? Small communities with an emphasis on the communes? Well, I want to back up because that there's a lot of very serious thought that went into what Steve just wrote. When he writes, I've almost come to the conclusion that there is no such thing as democracy. Well, Steve, you're not alone. The people who framed the Constitution of the United States knew where democracy goes. And they were probably better versed in the history of democracy up to that point than we are. they had the examples of the they had the examples of the Athenian democracy, and they had the Roman Republic to look back at. That's why we wind up with a government that is not a democracy and instead a republic with some with some democratic principles involved. But the failing lies in the fact that the founders, A, were looking out for themselves or their class, right? And B, that even in the greatest operation of goodwill, they made a determination, they assumed some things. They made some assumptions about human beings that it turns out in the 21st century are no longer tenable. They assumed that people would want to act in the best interests of the whole country. They also assumed, as Jefferson did, that this continent was big enough to provide for settlement unto the thousandth generation. Those are Jefferson's words. So, I mean, it is demonstrable that democracy does not work on a large basis, and it, or it doesn't work once power begins to concentrate in the hands of a few. It degenerates into some sort of authoritarianism or oligarchy or plutocracy, or as we have here, kleptocracy. That is not to say that it can't work, and that is not to say that the answer is libertarianism. And secondly, as we touched upon last night, you know, there's two kinds of libertarianism. There's left libertarianism and right-wing libertarianism. Right-wing libertarianism doesn't care if corporations go out and start shooting kittens from kittens in the street, or kids for that matter, because everything is in service to the market. Oh, where did I read it today? I read something somewhere, some goob talking about how... oh, never mind. A bunch of libertarian claptrap. I can't pull it out off a neuron right now. But they... libertarianism assumes, well, to use a phrase out of the law, assumes facts not in evidence. It assumes that people really do raise themselves up by their own bootstraps, and that everybody really, that the state of human nature really is that of the lone wolf, when anybody who knows anything about human nature knows that we are communal animals. And the tension and the tragedy and the horror that we see around us arises not from the failure of government, but from the imposition upon government of principles that run contrary to human existence and human nature. The most successful human groups, and this is where Steve's argument has merit, the most successful human groups in the history of the planet have been small groups who have operated for the common good. Consider the several tens of millions of human beings who led the most successful lives on the planet and did so in this hemisphere up until 1492. So maybe that I'd like to take a little bit of the edge off of your frustration. I hope maybe I have. Robert in Australia with a note. Baba went looking for an Australian news report on an Australian news site on the Fort Hood shooting. All I could find was a short video piece from yesterday made about an hour after the event. I thought having to sit through a commercial before I could watch it a bit much distasteful, especially when the report was... We don't know much at this time. I couldn't find a text report on the event. Once upon a time, a shooting like this would have been all over the news. Now it isn't. I can only assume it's because no one here wants to hear about yet another shooting in the U.S. Maybe that assumption's a bubble off plumb, Robert. Maybe it's just that mass shootings in the U.S., as horrifying as they might be to someone in Australia, are de rigueur, are to be expected, are just another day... tallying up another tick mark on the butcher's bill that is the Second Amendment. the butcher's bill that is the choice that we have made, that we will sacrifice the innocent so that the paranoid and the short penist can walk around with guns on their hips. Jesus, criminy. Ferg and I stopped at Kroger's the other evening because I wanted to get some yogurt. So lo and behold, the Kroger greeting was, oh, like 10 for $8 or something like that. It was a good price as compared to the Yoplait and the Chobani and the Hulabi and it, whatever. It was the best price there was. And that's probably because it was made with, like, GMO milk and stuff. But I opted for the Kroger brand. So none of the actual, it was later in the evening, and none of the actual aisles that would have checkers on them were open, and instead it was all the self-checkout stuff. So we're standing there running crap past the barcode scanner, yogurt, another yogurt, another yogurt, another yogurt. And there's a guy at the other, at another one of the checkouts who's scanning his stuff. Oh, he's got some milk. Oh, he's got some bread. Hey, look, he's got a package of hamburger. And he's got a semi-automatic pistol strapped to his hip. Because you never know when the guy getting the yogurt is just going to go sideways in America. Only I didn't have a gun or anything. That's the America I live in. And I would like to hope that if you witnessed something like that in Australia, Robert, you would think that the guy was a barbarian. That he was a freak. That he was probably half mad. Because they are. That's why we call them, that's why when we spell it out, it's capital. It's paren, capital L, closed paren, capital AWFUL, gun owner, lawful gun owner, because the L in lawful is optional. And more, and as often as not, if you hear about one of them, they've gone from awful to, from lawful to awful in the space of time it takes to pull the trigger back. I'm sorry, squeeze the trigger. The shooting aficionados will be upset if I say pull. Yeah, that's right, Irish Dave. Mass shootings in America are the new norm. But in an exceptional way, because America. And because Wolverines! Freedom! Right? Yeah. So, yeah, here we are in our wander through the blackberry bramble. And a wandering we must go, because it is Thorn in the Side Thursday. Now, I pegged this story as our first clearly delineated, obvious thorn in the side for this Thursday. It's the story of a baseball player. Baseball season is upon us. I'm always happy when baseball season is upon us because I like baseball. Oh, dear, that almost sounds like Robert De Niro. I like baseball. Do you like baseball? Robert De Niro, Untouchables. Baseball season is upon us. And the sports world, the sports talk world, has been aflame over a choice made by Daniel Murphy. Daniel Murphy is the second baseman for the New York Mets. Now, I didn't do the research to find out just how, is he any kin to Dale? Might he, by this point in time, might he be one of Dale Murphy's kids? You know, the Dale Murphy that played for the Braves? Anyway, Daniel Murphy took time off, 3 days, to be with his wife. for the birth of his first child. And even the word first in front of child. You know what? I'm okay with Daniel Murphy. You know, if they have a family, if they got 12 kids, I want Daniel Murphy to take off and be with his wife for the birth of every child, not just the first one. Well, okay, honey, the first one's on your the first one's on the ground. You're on your own for the rest of it. I mean, you know how to do it now, right? And the New York Mets organization was fine with it. The Mets organization said, this is an appropriate time for parents to be together. Those were the words of Sandy Alderson, who's the GM of the New York Mets. Alderson said, I think the delivery was a little earlier than expected, but those things you don't control. I'm happy he was able to be with his wife, and the fact that he'll be back tomorrow and only really miss two games is a positive for us. Well, that ain't playing. Oh no, that's not playing with the geniuses of sports radio in the New York market. I mean, isn't this guy a man? What kind of sissy is he that he'd miss a baseball game to go watch his little kid get born? You think I'm playing? Check out sports talk asshole Mike Francesa. Yeah, this is. Is this the part where we do the tennis ball and duct tape warning? Yeah, I think so.
Not even playing for 2 weeks. He's on maternity leave.
No, he won't be on maternity leave for 2 weeks. He'll be on maternity leave for 3 days. But, I mean, the point
is... Is that how long it is? 3 days?
It's three or four. It's not 2 weeks. But, I mean, he'll be back in a couple of days. But
What is the maternity leave for a baseball player, Mike?
Well, listen,
I never heard of something so ludicrous
this
in my life.
Listen, this has changed... I frankly don't get it. I'm going to be honest with you. Don't get it. But, you know, I guess it's more of a... I don't know where it started, to be honest with you. I mean, I guess it started with... I'm going to guess here. It started with...
Wait. He doesn't know where it started? Mike and Adam knew Eve, and they brought forth a son and named him... Abel? Well, okay. Oh, I'm sorry. Never mind.
Childbirth is where it started, because it started being, in the old days, guys weren't present. You know, they were in a waiting room when they had births. Then they went to this natural childbirth stuff, so the guys were part of it. So they were in the room, and they were there and everything, so now they needed to be there because they were part of it. Then everybody wanted to be there, which I completely understand. And I have.
Well, I'm glad he understands.
No problem with being there. I don't know why you need 3 days off. I'm going to be honest. I mean, you see the birth and you get back. I mean, what are you doing the first couple of days? Maybe you take care of the other kids? Well, you got to have someone do that if you're a Major League Baseball player. I'm sorry, you do. Because that's the only thing you're doing. You're not helping. Your wife doesn't need your help the first couple of days. You know that.
Oh, she doesn't? In the first 3 days after a woman gives birth, she doesn't need her partner there? She doesn't need the person whom she loved enough to join with in order to create a child? In the first 3 days after the birth and after the placenta has been passed along after the birth itself, and the hormones, all of that had been going up, you know, up around 11, all of a sudden dropped to 2, Screw her. She doesn't need him. You know, it would be easy to think of Mike Francesa as a caveman, but cavemen probably were better spouses. I don't know. I don't know what kind of bubble this goober lives in. But in the civilized world, which by definition means not the United States, fathers routinely take lengthy periods of time to be home following the birth of a child. Because, and I'm sure to Mike Francesa this is all just sissy stuff, but study after study after study after study shows that mommy does better and baby does better if the whole family is together in those first, and who wants to miss those first few precious days? As the father of four kids who are no longer anything remotely resembling infants, I know, and you who are parents know, that those first few days fly past. And those of you who are parents of grown children know that the distance between 2-day-old newborn and, hey, Dad, can I borrow the car keys, go by like that. But by God, this is baseball. And there's no baby birthing in baseball.
You're not doing much those first couple days with the baby that's just born. Let's say the day after you get out of the hospital. But they're allowed to take down, these guys take all take off now. And I had three kids and worked every day they were born. I mean, I was at every birth. I had twins. But, I mean, I was at the birth and worked the next day. I worked until a half hour before they were born, went across, was in the room when they were born, and worked the next day.
What a dad.
So, I mean, I didn't see any reason not to be working. I mean, I went to the hospital at night when I left there. I went to the hospital for 2 straight weeks. My kids were in neonatal for 2 weeks because they were born, my twins were born underweight. So I used to go every night from work right to the hospital and see them every night. Then, you know, back into the city and see the kids. Harrison was born at 9 in the morning. I worked that day. Had the baby at 9, came in and worked at 1. I don't see.
Okay. And you know, I really do. I welcome your thoughts on this, but there's a subtext here. There's an undercurrent here. This isn't just about a baseball player who took off. He could be with his wife while she gave birth to their first child. This is about the attitude toward work. And where work fits into the larger issue of one's life in this country. And work is noble. Work is good. Work is valuable. But as one sage once told me many years ago, he said, take time to be with your kids. Take time off to be with your kids. Because you're not going to come to the end of your roads and days and lay there on your deathbed thinking, I wish I'd spent more time at work. I took that to heart. But My larger question is, if this was a discussion being had in the civilized world, would there even be any room for this kind of assholery in it? I'll conjure our buddy Scott in Sweden again. Would people just laugh Mike Francesa right out of the room? What kind of idiotic yahoo is this that thinks work is more important than family? And nobody's telling him to quit his job. Nobody's saying that Daniel Murphy is not going to be at second base for the Mets for the entire 162-game season that's just barely underway. Why is this even an issue? But again, let's note, this is not just Mike Francesa. It's also and both of these instances come from WFAN New York and Sports Talk Radio, which, with a couple of notable exceptions, is every bit as much of a right-wing sewer as the AM radio airwaves generally are. There are a couple of places you can go and hear somebody with a progressive mind talk about sports, and, you know, generally it's much more interesting, much smarter. You know, we're surprised. No, so Mike Francesa did his gig, and along comes former University of Maryland and, what, Cincinnati Bengals quarterback Boomer Esiason. Sorry, I was taught to call them the Bengals by my Steelers fan roommates in college, and I should have said Bengals. Boomer Esiason, who is the father of a special needs child, who has made it as a special needs child all the way to the age of 22, which I applaud. Many don't. Now, you'll note that here the experts are Mike Francesa and Boomer Esiason. Where's the parenting expert? Now, I'm sure he would be roundly criticized as somewhere between a communist and a anti-American. But what about Benjamin Spock? What do you reckon, doctors? You know, because an entire generation was raised on Dr. Spock, and he had some of his advice is outdated and outmoded. But where do you think he would have fallen in terms of being there for the first couple of days of one's baby's brand new life? And how about the right wing parenting experts? Because forever you can't turn on the American Family Association Radio or Family Research Council or any of these other right-wing evangelical weirdos without them telling you that they, by God, are the repository of family values. Where do you reckon they'd fall on this? Well, he needs to go to work and leave the baby raising to Mommy and Jesus. Anyway, Mike Francesa is bad enough. Here's Boomer. You know, oh my God.
By the way, did you read the story, Met Related, which is why I bring it up? And I don't know, there was an inference to it, but I have not been able to back it up. I was reading the paper this morning, right? And one of the newspapers, I wish I could tell you which one it was. I didn't write down who wrote the article.
Can I just take a moment and say that I love all this professional broadcasting? Sometimes I play these clips and I actually feel better about myself. This is one of those moments.
Right? Reference that, you know, Wilmer Flores is being brought back to the Mets.
All right.
And the reason for that is that Daniel Murphy is taking paternity leave to be with his wife now that she's had the baby.
Now, hey, Buster, can you spit that P and your B's into the microphone a little bit better, you professional broadcaster, you?
Now, it's one thing, obviously, when you want to be there for the birth of your child, which every one of us totally supported 100%.
Totally.
Opening day. What's the reason? His wife's in labor. Nobody can argue that, right? But now, to me, and this is just my sensibility, assuming the birth went well.
He paints pretty broad. He paints with a pretty broad brush with that word sensibility now, doesn't he? But let's hear his sensible question.
This is just my sensibility. Assuming the birth went well, assuming your wife is fine, assuming the baby is fine, 24 hours, you stay there, baby's good, you have a good support system for the mom and the baby, you get your ass back to your team and you play baseball. That's my take on it.
Come in. Oh, I'm sorry. He was sitting there knocking on his desk.
What? There's nothing you can do anyway. You're not breastfeeding the kid.
Yeah, but he's got legal rights to be there if he wants to be there.
Hey, Eddie, what's the paternity leave rule in America? How many weeks? Go ahead.
Six.
2 weeks.
Yeah, there you go.
Now, I'm not telling you Murph's going to miss 2 weeks.
That is federal law.
But the way he was positioned in the paper...
that is federal law. How many working parents in America can afford 2 weeks of unpaid paternity leave? This is a brutal and barbaric place. Because, see, when we talk about paternity leave in the civilized world, we're talking about paid paternity leave and paid maternity leave. Because there has been a social choice made that children are important in the scope of the larger scope of the culture, and that the children are so important that in the beginnings of their lives they are most important. It is most important that they have their parents with them instead of being, you know, these right-wing turds, you know, because they're forever going on about, well, we don't like the goddamn nanny state. Okay, you don't want to turn the kid over to a nanny, then the parents need to be there. Well, maybe you're right, Irish Dave. Real Major League wives just lay down in the bullpen and then get up and go back to their sideline seats. Jack in Shreveport pointing out, yes, and it's not like they don't have 1,000 more games. Well, it's 160 to 160. They can be at that season, right? To throw the little ball around and hit it with a stick. 162. Oh, yeah, okay. Sounds like these bozos are calling the new dad a wimp, or that euphemism that is used to describe the female anatomy. Yes. Which, yeah. Okay, program note here at 2 minutes past the hour, the first hour of the program having flown by, we are having some donder und blitzen outside, some thunder and lightning. And insofar as lightning may be involved, that means that there's every possibility in the world that the fine folks at Shentel will not be able to maintain an internet connection. Now, nothing has happened so far, but I'm just mentioning this because things have a habit of going sideways whenever you've got the lovely combination of electricity in the sky, the poorly maintained coal-fired power grid, and a cable ISP whose technology vaguely resembles two dented tomato cans and a whole lot of strings. So if things just suddenly go, you'll know why. Yeah, Irish Dave. Inference? Talking about inference? I don't think so. Let's get back to Boomer.
Hold on. Let me see if I can.
You know, it's not that.
I'm like, are you kidding me?
Bottom line, that's not me. I wouldn't do that.
You'd get back and you'd play game two.
Quite frankly, I would have.
Go ahead.
I would have said C-section before the season starts. I need to be at opening day. I'm sorry. This is what makes our money. This is how we're going to live our life. This is going to give my child every opportunity to be a success in life. I'll be able to afford any college I want to send my kid to because I'm a baseball player.
There you go. Here it is.
Yeah, well, okay, we've got our answer from Boomer. The baseball season, and in particular, two games of a 162-game baseball season, is more important than not subjecting one's spouse to unnecessary surgery. Yeah, I'd just tell her, you know, C-section. I mean, I'm sorry, honey, but I got some baseball to play here. Here, just put the little mask over your nose and start counting backwards. 99, 98, and soon you'll have a baby. 97, and some stitches. 96, And some, yeah, okay, so there'll be a scar and you'll wear one pieces instead of bikinis. But, you know, who's counting? 95, 94. I wonder if he was this callous with his family and their special needs child. Then again, I think back to Godzilla from Wasilla, you know, the half-baked Alaskan, the half-baked half-term governor, Mussolini, Caribou Barbie, Sarah Palin, and how that poor little special needs baby of theirs got handed around like a sack of spuds from one Palin to the next while she pursued her wild, rabid-eyed frenzy of maybe someday being a heartbeat away from John McCain's cancer. It's the cognitive dissonance at the end of the day that gets you. How can they sit there and preach all this holier-than-thou claptrap and then turn around and say, you know what? Honey, your due date is inconveniencing my baseball schedule. Now, granted, I have a contract with the Mets, and I am a member of the Major League Baseball Players Association, and we have certain things in there that allow me to take things like paternity leave, but Jesus Christ, honey, really? Do you have to have the baby on the second day of the season? I'm working on a batting average here. Maybe you should have just slapped her around a little bit during spring training and maybe brought on a premature birth. Maybe that would have worked out better for Boomer Esiason.
You dick!
I couldn't agree more. Michael, meanwhile, who very, very, very seldom ever types in all caps. Subject line, all caps, pig! And then all caps in the message. This pig just said cut his wife open so he can work opening day playing ball? Apparently the question mark and the exclamation point keys got stuck. And then little letters, holy fuck. But look, that's who these people are. And we ain't done. No.
You'd get back and you'd play game two.
Quite frankly, I would have...
Oh, wait a minute. Dude sounds like he's going to cry. You get back and you play game two. I want to be a baseball player. I could have been a baseball player. But I was a bad baseball player, so I couldn't be a bad baseball player. But if I was a baseball player, I'd play game two. What would these bastards say about a guy who works in a coal mine? Get in there and breathe that dust and take some home to the baby, damn it. Oh, I think we've got some analysis coming in from Asa. Brother Bob, I think the sports talk goober is speaking to those inner city men who have no work ethic and eat lobster on their days off while driving around in their Cadillacs. Could be. Could be. Wait a minute. I'm going to have to do a little empirical research real quick. Daniel Murphy's a white guy. For a minute there, I was thinking, I wonder if this guy's got dark skin and therefore they're thinking he's being shiftless. No, you know what? As a white guy, Daniel Murphy is setting a bad example. Hey, get back and play game two!
Good.
I always said C-section before the season starts. I need to be at opening day. I'm sorry. This is what makes our money. This is how we're going to live our life. This is going to give my child every opportunity to be a success in life.
And who gives a damn if I'm a decent father? I mean, I'm going to be gone for for 81 games anyway every year. So that's a whole lot of time he's going to be without his dad. What the hell does it matter if I'm there the first day of his or her life anyway, huh?
Be able to afford any college I want to send my kid
right.
to because I'm a baseball player.
There you go. Here it is. Wilmer Flores. By the way, you know who else the Mets called up? Kyle Farnsworth.
They have no choice.
I know they had to, but listen to this.
I'm surprised they didn't bring up Dice K.
Here, Flores. Now, Flores was brought up because Daniel Murphy's on paternity leave. They think Murphy might come back today, but they don't know. Now, legally, he has the right not to come back, I guess, for 2 weeks. I think we all agree Murphy ain't going to miss 2 weeks. And there's a chance he's already back. But the way it was written in the paper intimated that Murphy might not be back for tonight's game. I'd like to think he will be back. I'm not suggesting he won't be back. I'm saying that in the paper, they wrote it like, we brought up Wilmer Flores because Murphy may not be back.
Just in case he may not be back, right?
Well, I mean, is he back or not? I mean, that's a fair question to ask.
Right. Well,
Okay, so this is audio. I'm watching the video, too. Any fans, and I know he's a right-winger, but still, it was a wonderful comedy. Any fans of the old Frasier show out there? Anybody? Hands? Okay. You know, the guy that says, I'd play game two! You know who this guy is? I mean, he is a living character. Well, first of all, the character on the Frasier show started, they were all caricatures, okay? Out of the radio industry. And of course, one of the biggest, most broadly painted caricatures in that series was, what was the character's name? Bulldog? You know, shaven head, you know, little gongy bangs on, talked like that. This guy is a caricature of a caricature. He's Bulldog. Oh, my God. I don't understand. Does this happen because they're, I mean, this is CBS Sports Radio New York on CBS. Does this happen because everybody's got to be a little bit more outrageous than the next program in a market like New York? Because if it is, you know, back when I was a young guy who wanted to be an actor, you know, the goal was New York. The goal was never L.A. The goal was never Hollywood. The goal was New York, to be on the boards, the great white way, to be an actor. And in radio, it's the same thing. You know, you go to New York. You know, if you can make it there, you can make it anywhere. Is this what that does? That you have to get on the air and just say deliberately dumb, hurtful, stupid shit for a check? Hey. Okay, so it has been confirmed by Irish Dave. Daniel Murphy is no kin to Dale. Although his birthday is All Fool's Day, one day after the birth of Noah, his son. They named the son Noah. And Marty pointing out, fortunately, Daniel Murphy and the Mets organization are much better people. One thing to remember, in the NFL, Boomer only had to work once a week. Well, that's true, too. I like this from Marty. Mr. Murphy demands that wife go through C-section before opening day. Mrs. Murphy calls lawyer, files for divorce. Oh, we're not done. But, yeah, Marty, I know. And on top of it all, the fact that Boomer Esiason, who only had to play one day a week through a career which was demonstrably shorter than some baseball careers, has a special needs son. So are we to understand that after the child was born, he just looked at his wife and says, yeah, okay, the kid's got cystic fibrosis. See ya. Thanks. Thanks, Steve. I think this is actually a compliment. That's because you horned men are just wussies and pansies. I'd rather be that than Boomer Esiason or, yeah, I'd play game two, or Mike Francesa. I'll take that as a badge of honor. The phone lines are, of course, open. 304-658-3333 is the number. On Skype, if you want to jump in that way, Bob Kincaid Horn is the contact account. Bob Kincaid Horn. If we've never talked on Skype before, just look it up and send me a contact request, and there you are. I'll okay the contact request, and we'll be talking before you know it. Okay, Irish Dave. Boomer saying dumb shit is not deliberate. It comes naturally. I can buy that. And then this, which is kind of an update on last night. Last night I was, we briefly discussed that what Arizona could not accomplish, by God, Mississippi would. The governor of Mississippi Stan, a guy by the name of Phil Bryant, proudly today signed into law a religious liberty bill. Now, oddly enough, most of us, when we think of religious liberty, well, we kind of value that. I mean, as much as I despise organized religion generally, I don't want to make anybody, I don't want to say that anybody can't participate in it. I just reserve the right to think they're dumber than shit for doing it. I mean, you know. Well, you know. Okay, I take back the dumber than shit part. I just don't like organized religion. But I don't want to keep anybody from doing it. And thus, we have religious liberty. Your rights end where my nose begins. You can be a floor-rolling, strychnine-swigging, serpent-handling, tongue-speaking, head-anointing fundy from now until the day you fundy up your last. It's okay by me. Not that you need my permission, which is also about what religious liberty is all about. But because the right wing and the evangelicals are wholeheartedly determined to turn every meaning, every linguistic nuance, and even the obvious stuff on its ear and make it into something hateful, vicious, and vulgar, well, by God, Mississippi Stan now has a religious liberty bill that means that and of course, nobody can get all gay married in Mississippi anyway, but they know it's coming. Sooner or later, some federal judge is going to rule that the gays have to be able to get married in Mississippi because of that pesky-ass constitution that they fought to get free of so damn hard back in 1861. Well, if a couple of guys go out and pick out some China patterns and a couple of candlesticks or whatever, and they want to celebrate, and you know, who knows? Maybe there's a United Church of Christ that'll marry them up in Mississippi or what have you, and they want to have some sort of union ceremony, even though it's not governmentally recognized. And they go to get a cake. This is that law so the baker looks at him and says, "Well, I ain't gonna make no wedding cake for no pair of sickening sodomites. You disgust me. Leave my building before I call down the wrath of the Almighty upon you." Yeah, that got signed into law today. The Family Research Council, headed by Tony Norman? Yes, Mother Bates. Perkins. Was fairly crowing. The victory was a huge one for FRC, FERC. We FERC Mississippi, who worked with local churches and conservative policy organizations to coordinate a pastor's letter in support of the measures with more than 600 signatures. That, in turn, helped to bring along the business community, which in Arizona was so deceived by the media and outside leftist groups. Can somebody whistle the Internationale for me? that it couldn't distinguish what the bill actually did. Mississippi companies, of which there are not that many, didn't have that problem because the state tuned out the propaganda and focused on the actual language. Don't they have some foreign car manufacturing plants in Mississippi, Stan? And don't those car manufacturers have human rights policies that respects that respect LGBT rights? How long you reckon they're going to want to hang out in Mississippi, Stan? No, they were just quiet. And it's not like the All-Star game or the Super Bowl or anything is ever going to come to Jackson, Mississippi or Tupelo. And so now, by signing this into law, Governor Bryant has bought his dirt-poor state a few million dollars worth of litigation. Good for him. Yay! It's 20 minutes past the hour. We're going to take a little break. This is Conversation Radio. I promise you it is. Just light up the phone lines, 304-658-3333. And we will get the conversation rollicking along. We are listener-supported. There's no bulldog here, and there's no fancy set, and the equipment's 10 years old and in some ways fading fast. And we just try to keep the bills paid here. And that takes about $150 a night. And so, consequently, that takes your contributions. That's how this all happens. And I want to thank James for getting us started. It is much appreciated. And now James just needs some company. So hit the PayPal button or shoot me a note saying that you're using the traditional mails. And that way I can include that in the tally and tell Boss Man Wayne he doesn't have to wear his spider-proof gloves when he goes to the mailbox. We'll be right back. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Alabama's got me so upset. Tennessee made me lose my rest. Everybody knows about Mississippi. God damn. So upset. The elections have made me lose my rest. Everybody knows about Mississippi. God damn. Can't you see it? Can't you feel it? It's all in the air. I can't stand the pressure much longer. Somebody say a prayer. Alabama's got me so upset. And Lurleen Wallace has made me lose my rest. Everybody knows about Mississippi. God damn. Hound dogs on my trail. School children sitting in jail. Black cat cross my path. I think every day's gonna be my last. Lord have mercy on this land of mine. We all gonna get it in due time. I don't belong here, I don't belong there. I've even stopped believing in prayer. Don't tell me, I'll tell you. Me and my people just about do. I've been there, so I know. You keep on saying go slow. That's just the trouble. Washing the windows. Picking your cotton. We're nothing but rotten. Too damn lazy. I'm thinking's crazy. Where am I going? What am I doing? I don't know. Just try to do my very best. Cannot be counted with all the rest. Everybody knows about Mississippi. God damn. the school boycotts. They try to say it's a communist plot. But all I want is equality for my sister, my brother, my people and me. Now you listen, you lied to me all these years. You told me to wash and clean my ears and talk real fine just like a lady. And you'd stop calling my mama Aunt Sadie. Oh, but America is full of lies. We all gonna die, die like flies. Cause I don't trust nobody anymore. Keep on saying, go slow. Well, that's just the trouble. Desegregation. Mass participation. Unification. Quality, because everybody knows about Mississippi, everybody knows about Alabama, everybody knows about Mississippi. God damn!
All right. How could I not? The essential subject matter changes, but the essential unfairness does not. The immortal Nina Simone and Mississippi Goddamn. Requested, or inspired at least, by our buddy Fritz in Arkansas and much appreciated by our buddy Shorty from L.A. Let's go to the phones. 304-658-3333 is the number. Hey, welcome to the program.
What's up, Bob?
What's happening, Jim?
Oh, man, that Boomer Esiason story. That's Boomer Esiason, right?
Yeah.
That's just, I guess that was just mostly macho talk, but, and they're trying to make something out of nothing. But,
Well, I mean, yeah, what a nothing burger. Yeah. A guy stays out of the lineup to attend the birth of his child and stay with his wife for a day or two? I mean, this is, and look, I mean, I guess I'm guilty, Jim. You know, we've sort of catapulted the propaganda here. But what an asshat. You got to call this stuff out, don't you?
Oh, I agree. It's incredible. But not only that, the subtext to me is that they don't want, quote-unquote, regular workers even thinking that they should take a day off or something like that for some sort of the birth of a child, some sort of family, you know, emergency. That's what I was thinking. You know, I mean, that's the subtext I see in that.
Well, I think it is. And meanwhile, I saw another story, and, you know, this is just goddess of irony stuff, but I saw another story that says that Americans are so overworked that even the ones who do get paid vacation don't take it. The two crappy, crummy weeks of vacation that some Americans do get, they don't take because the boss doesn't like them to leave. Because they make it so damned unforgiving hard to schedule the vacation that it's not worth the hassle.
Yeah. And you talk about, I mean, he's, what was that? Was that what, on CBS, NBC or something?
Oh, that's CBS Sports Radio, WFAN, out of New York.
Okay. It's like, I'll tell you the truth. I used to be a huge football fan, but in the last couple of years, you know, just a lot of things. It's kind of like, is that other? How does this game affect me? And you know, you realize it doesn't unless you're, you know, betting money on it or something like that. But I mean, it's, one team wins and another team. If your team doesn't win, are you gonna like get all bummed out? I mean, I grew up being a Saints fan, still kind of am.
Well, you kind of gotta be, don't you, down there? I mean, where the Saints are concerned, there's entirely too much suffering already invested.
I was at the first kickoff, and there when Tom Dempsey kicked the 63-yarder.
Oh, were you really? You were there?
Yeah. I remember, because me and Frank Chris, We were about 10 years old. Yeah, yeah, it would have been 10. And, you know, the Lions go ahead. You know, it's what, 17-16. There's 42 seconds left. The Kilmer drops back, throws a pass to Al Dodd. And, they're like at the 42-yard line. And, of course, the goalposts were at the goal line back then. It was last century. And, stayed and watched, you know, what the hell, is only one more play. So, sure enough, Tom Dempsey got it through. It just barely cleared the crossbar. But the getting back, it's just, you know, I can remember getting real bummed out when we lose, but then it's like, how does that affect me? You know, unless, like I said, unless you got money riding on the game. And, you know, it's bread and circuses.
There's certainly a bread and circuses aspect to it, but when a team is intimately associated with its community, when it's not just in a town because that's where the owner brought the town because the town agreed to use the public commons to rip off some land and build them a stadium, when a team means something to a town. New Orleans, Pittsburgh, Cleveland. It's more than that. It really is. Because you know, a community comes together. Now, I won't say for a minute, Jim, that the others, that there's not a bread and circuses aspect. There certainly is. And it's worth remembering that professional sports in its entirety was invented by the wealth class to give the people who wanted to be engaged in something to be engaged in besides realizing how crappily they were being treated. I mean, that's the origin of professional baseball and professional football.
Yep. It's, it's definitely bread and circuses, and, in that aspect alone is, you know, I only watched I think maybe five or six games last season. And partly because of my work schedule, but even if I had time to watch the game, like I said, it's only like five or six games because it's like, what's that old song? Is that all there is? You know?
Yeah.
And how does this really affect me in the grand scheme? Like I said, unless I was back in Vegas and I got money riding in the game, I don't really care. And what's the line? What's the over under? it's just distraction, you know. It's like.
But you know what? I also think from a human standpoint, we all have to have leisure, and we've got precious little of it. And how people take their leisure. I'm not going to sit in judgment of that. Some people may want to go for hikes in the woods. Cool. I think there's real value in that. Some people may want to sit and watch baseball or basketball or football or hockey. In this country where people are so brutally overworked and where the people who do have jobs are worked like draft mules and the people who don't have jobs are on a daily basis exposed to condemnation and ridicule from the right wing in this country. Everybody needs something. You know, even the people. You know, look. Okay, I mean, I make a lot of fun out of Here Comes Honey Boo Boo Child. You want to watch Honey Boo Boo Child for a little bit just to make the day go away before you go to sleep, and then you get up and you do it again. Amen. Watch Honey Boo Boo Child. I mean, you know, I don't manifest any sense of superiority because I tend to read books.
I hear you. Well, it's like another thing, as far as like going to a game. If you're the average wage earner, you can pretty much forget that. I don't know how. I can't remember last time I went to a Saints game. I mean, I haven't. I just moved back about a year ago, but I was out for almost 20 years. But I imagine. You're looking at around $100 a ticket, or close to it, and that's not even the.
Yeah, and that's before you get to the hot dog stand.
Yeah, and don't forget the beer.
Oh, Idaho, I'll never forget the. Well, it depends on if the beer at the stadium's any good.
Yeah. Well, just,
I'm a beer snob. I'm sorry. I just am.
I'm the same way. I can't drink Bud, Miller, the regular. Although they're coming out, seems like they're.
But you've got some pretty classic brands down there, right? I mean, Dixie.
I don't think that's in business anymore.
Oh, did they get wiped out by the hurricane?
I never cared for Dixie. Now they've got a local brew, which is pretty damn good. Abita, and they've got a whole bunch of.
Yeah, I've had Abita. It gets out and around.
Yeah, they've got a whole bunch of different flavors. You know, it's pretty good. And Dixie's, I think, is long gone.
Yeah, I know. What I'm getting at is it is something that I ran across in the stands at the Nationals Park last summer, where a frosty cold Coors Light is $9.
Oh yeah, you could easily look. I mean, you in a day would go to a game. You look at it. I would imagine you can easily drop $200-$400. You know.
Yeah. And I mean, even the nosebleed seats aren't cheap.
I'll take your word for it. Like I said, I can't remember the last time I went to a game.
Ferg and I took one in last summer in D.C., and we sat out in the outfield, and I think the tickets were like $25 a piece or something, you know, for the outfield cheap seats.
Mm-hmm. Well, when I lived in Seattle, what was that, 95, I did get a couple of Seattle Mariner games. In fact, I went to Ford. It was, I think every time, Randy Johnson was pitching. He was an awesome pitcher, you know. But I think what helped him, he was like 6'9", and, you know, you're standing on the pitcher's mound, and you're 6'9" on top of that. So it's like he's throwing down at people. But I remember baseball games were a lot cheaper. Of course, you only have 16 games now. It used to be 14 pro games, and you got 162 baseball games. That's just like another thing. What was it, last year or the year before? The owners were saying, like, well, let's see, how can we improve our money? We're playing 16 games, 4 exhibitions. Let's just cut it down to 18 regular games and 2 exhibition games. And it's crazy. It's almost like what they're doing to the college players, you know.
And speaking of which, I'm really excited at the prospect of seeing what happens coming out of this decision in Chicago about the Northwestern team. I would absolutely be tickled to death to see whatever it takes to break the NCAA into a million tiny pieces, just because they've so abused the idea of being a nonprofit.
Oh yeah. It's like everything in this country, to me, it all bleeds, like let it bleed. It's all, everything is such a scam to me. Exactly. That's not non-profit. I mean, you wouldn't, you know, the final 64, the final two, I've never liked basketball, but I don't pay attention to that stuff, you know. Like I said, football was the last vestige, and I didn't watch that many games. And, you know, unless I was back, I guess maybe I'll find a bookie out here and start, if I could just pick them. But that's another thing, man. It almost seems like those games are fixed. If you look at the point spread, they get them pretty damn close.
Yeah, there's always that question, you know, are the bookies that good? Or are the refs taking their shaving razors with them to the court and shaving a few points here and there?
Yeah, I don't know, Bob. But you know me, I'm a little bit. I tend to, things don't happen by accident more often than not. You know, there's a reason why certain things happen. And I guess you know the list of things I could go to. But it wouldn't surprise me. Yeah.
No, nor I. I mean, and I guess I come by it honest. My father was a diehard sports watcher, and it didn't matter if it was baseball or football or basketball or, you know, if it was sports. I mean, I can remember the early days of ESPN when my father desperately tried to figure out the rules of Australian rules football, because that's about the only thing that ESPN ran. And invariably, at some point in time, not just because his team might be losing or whatever, he'd look up and say, I swear it's all rigged. That's what he'd say. It's all rigged. My father was a bit of a cynic.
Well, had good company. That's like ESPN. Now, they started doing this 4 or 5 years ago, where you have to subscribe to ESPN. Or when it first started, like it was at the back end of the season, where 3 or 4 games would not be on local TV, would not be on. You know, if your team is playing away, usually you can watch it. But now you have to have ESPN to watch some games. I think now it's one game every.
With the consolidation of the college conferences. My Mountaineers had a kind of abysmal basketball season. Well, we had an abysmal football season, too, but who's counting? But now this and people started dealing with this. Big Ten fans had to contend with this years ago. And this year the Big 12 network came online. So the Mountaineers would be playing football or basketball, and a basketball game that ordinarily would have been visible to people in the Mountain State. Not if you don't have the Big 12 network, you don't.
Oh, so you got to pay an extra $150 to $200 for us again, yeah. Oh, the name that's similar, is that all?
Yeah, on a cable system that may or may not work on any given day.
Right. Well, it's like, I remember Saturdays, football is like, you can look in Vegas, they start at 9 o'clock, or they go from 9 to 9, and then Sunday you got, not one, you got two, you got three football games. Of course, in Vegas, you got all, just go into a sports book, and then they got every game on. I don't know how you can watch that, because once or twice, I actually went into a sports book, but it's hard, I found it hard to try and keep up if I was trying to watch one game, because they've got like, they've got 10 TVs going with 10 different games. You know, I guess some people can do that. It's kind of like when I tried to get on. I mean, I can do the internet, but when I try to do when I'm listening to you on Malloy, and I'm trying to email or Twitter or something like that, I find it hard to walk and chew gum at the same time, i.e., listen to you or Malloy and then try. Get a tweet out. But I guess I'm getting better, so.
Well, multitasking is not a natural, computer multitasking, media multitasking is not something that's hardwired into the DNA, at least yet evolutionarily, so don't feel bad about it, Jim. It's awful good to talk to you, though, and I'm glad you called, and goodness, I guess spring has fully sprung down there, hasn't it?
Oh, yeah. In fact, I just planted some, I got like 2 strawberries from last year.
Are the azaleas going strong?
Yep.
Love it. Yep. I've still got a bet that we'll see more snow up here yet.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to move back to Vegas, out to Colorado. I haven't decided which. I have to say, but I guess if I won the lottery, I could get a place at both places. So.
Well, there. It's easy now, isn't it?
Yeah, that's all right.
Jim, take it easy. Let's talk soon. Our buddy Jim calling from Louisiana Stan. Onward we go. Lines open, 304-658-3333 on this Thorn in the Side Thursday. Hey, welcome to the program.
Welcome to me, the obnoxious motor mouth.
Well, I don't know. Crank the motor and we'll find out how obnoxious you are.
Well, first of all, the talk about pro football, I discovered that game in 54, and, why in 54? Because Brown, Paul Brown came out to this place, and
Changed everything.
Yeah, well, he brought some Noah Counts with him, a guy with a funny first name of Otto, and a guy that was kicking field goals named Wu, and a receiver named Dante Lavelli, and a big running back named Maurice Bassett. I think I've told that story before, but that's what got me hooked.
But that's what I was talking about with Jim. You know, a community takes an ownership interest in a team. And then, I mean, look at the anguish of Cleveland when Art Modell put the shiv to him and moved the team to Baltimore.
Well, I never liked the man anyway because he fired Burham. And he did it in the middle of a newspaper strike in one of the coldest winters we had. And, in fact, the guy that brought Paul to Cleveland in 1946 was named Art. What the hell was his name? He was brought to Cleveland in the 1930s because of a big newspaper strike. He was a Chicago guy. And he had, well, when I say Chicago guy, did I say anything there that you get to meet the gist of
yes.
What I just said? And man, you had to play that Nina Simone thing. I have not heard that in years, and what a piece of work. God damn.
Yeah, and you know what's funny? I'll bet you still can't play that on the terrestrial airwaves because somebody would get fined $475,000 every time Nina saying the word goddamn.
Yes. Well, she was, again, another guy I spent plastered to that radio listening to. Bill Randall used to play a lot of her stuff. And he was a funny guy. He did recordings of, like he said, everybody from John Lewis, the MJQ pianist, to George Lewis, the New Orleans clarinetist. He had a lot of, you know, there was a lot of weaknesses, too. I mean, God knows, bringing Elvis to Cleveland in 1955, I think it was. It took him to a few high schools around Cleveland.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, he was on top of stuff, that guy. But, you know, getting back to the professional sports thing, I mean, the first thing I learned was don't bet these games. Older guys, I was.
The only way you win is by not playing.
Well, these guys told me that they felt the whole thing was rigged. But I think the system works this way, Bob, when it comes to betting on anything. The losers pay the winners, and the bookie takes, in those days, 10% was the term that was used. So who's making the money off of it?
Is that what's referred to as the VIG? No, that's on a loan. Never mind.
Yeah. Well, VIG is a loan, but this juice or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, the juice.
Yeah, that's the term, yeah. And not the guy that can't carry the ball from Buffalo. Although when I went to Chautauqua the first time, guess what the news coming out of Buffalo was? And, you know, Chautauqua got a lot of Buffalo news on television and the lodges, you know. Whatever you want to call those places, they charge you an arm and a leg to stay there for a week, you know?
Yeah.
You left there walking lopsided because of them, you know? But I also, my last trip up there with my second wife, Bob, I hit, throwing a black spinner, I hit a 7-pound smallmouth, and the next cast was one that was over 6. And I looked at it, and I said to the
you'd been living right.
That again in my life. It was just one of those things. But anyway, the idea with sports, you're right. It's another thing we talked about, bread and circuses.
Sure.
Take their minds off.
But the entirety of media now are bread and circuses.
Yeah.
Like I said, everything, you know, there are, it was a decade or more ago that Bruce Springsteen, I think, sang 67 channels and nothing on. Well, now there's 200 channels, and there's still nothing on.
Well,
except for the fact that there's they've expanded now to the point that there's a channel for every niche interest that can be conceived. I mean, consider that the Godzilla from Wasilla, you know, Sarah Palin, damned if she doesn't have another television show.
Jesus.
Yeah, I know.
How dumb are my fellow American citizens?
Well, they're not all dumb, but apparently what we're doing is we're The economics of cable television is spiraling downward, trying to discover the law of diminishing returns. Because, well, for instance, the highest rated, and God knows why, the highest rated cable news channel program is that guy who wanted to rub down women with falafel.
Riley.
Yeah, yeah.
Whenever I see him, I said, "Oh, really?"
Exactly.
And yet,
you know, he's a ratings monster. But if he pulls in a million viewers, well, I mean that's a big deal. And comparatively, he gets his ass kicked every day by SpongeBob SquarePants, the cartoon.
Well, kids have always had a stranglehold. Bob, when I was a kid, it was Howdy Doody, and now, of course, Captain Video.
Three channels?
Yeah, we had NBC, ABC, and actually we had NBC, CBS, I believe, or ABC, NBC, and Dumont.
Yeah, there were those other networks that sprung up and then came and went, but yeah. But it was all over the air, and basically during the primetime broadcast schedule, everybody was watching the same thing the whole country over. So you could an advertiser, for instance, could know that they were going to reach, you know, 40 million people or 20 million people.
It's a secret of their success.
Yeah. Now it's an entirely different game.
I'll stick a thing in here. People who read, grab a copy of David Halverson's book, The 50s. Because, man, oh, man, does he hit that real hard. He talks about, the fact that in the beginning, Desi Arnaz and Lucille Ball, who were legally married, they couldn't appear in a double bed together.
No, of course not. No.
If they were in separate rooms, it could be like a lot of married couples I knew that, you know.
Well, for as smarmy and cutesy as it was, I guess it was kind of shocking when Mike and Carol Brady in the Brady Bunch would be shown, you know, lying in the same bed reading a book before lights out.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the late 60s.
It was at least a little more real in the presentation. It just one of those, it was a funny look at the whole life of the country. And the afternoon soap operas that were on the radio first and moved over to TV. God almighty. I can't say much. You know, you're a little kid listening to this stuff and wondering, what the hell is this about, you know?
Yeah.
Well, my mother took me to see the 48 Indians parade past with their victory parade. I was 5 years old. And, of course, if I had been 15, the view of the secretaries around me would have certainly taken my eyes off of the damn traveling baseball players in a hurry, you know. Everything is relative to what you're at in life at the time, you know.
Sure.
But it's... Well, did you ever watch the... I'll tell you something that knocked me out. Was the women's fast pitch softball tournament, collegiate softball tournament.
Oh, that's good ball. Yeah, that's good ball.
Man, oh, man, I'm watching these pitchers and saying, Bill, you couldn't hit that stuff if you were waving an atomic weapon around you. I mean, a rocket ship. You couldn't hit these people.
Ted Williams couldn't hit that, yeah.
They're amazing. And baseball was the game, but, man, pro football has knocked it for a loop. And these tournaments, you begin to wonder sometime, how do they, who does the choices for the teams that get entered in?
That's the tournament selection committee. And you know what? When somehow or another it winds up being, what was it, the Sweet 16 or the Elite 8 or whatever, and it just happens to be Louisville and Kentucky, that's a coincidence. Yeah, some coincidence.
Well, we had a guy coaching basketball here. Damn, I had his name down and it blew out of my mind. A black coach. He's in the Coaches Hall of Fame. He was one of the fast break start guys. And a buddy of mine played for him at Cleveland State. And, damn, what was his name? He supposedly developed a fast break. And then he coached my buddy. And my buddy talks a lot about being coached by this guy. He said he was a solid guy and a damn good coach. That game, professional basketball in the 50s, was a semi-joke. How about the Fort Wayne Pistons?
Fort Wayne.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what was made in Fort Wayne, I believe, was the Studebaker was still being made down there. And they made one year in a Studebaker. You couldn't tell which was the front and which was the back. It was an amazing-looking thing. But advertising is the name of the game, and professional football, I can't follow it like I used to. It's, well, maybe it's because I, for whatever reason, but when the networks get a hold of something, when TV gets a hold of something, they can destroy it. They can throw it at you until, and even sports talk radio, I mean, you tune it in Cleveland, all we're talking about is, should they draft Johnny Touchdown?
Oh, God.
And they start arguing. Well,
you know what? Anybody, and I know there are people out there who disagree with me on this, but anybody who drafts Johnny Manziel deserves what they're getting. Because, I mean,
he's kind of small for a pro quarterback.
Well, but the thing that that grabbed me was early in this season when he came off the field and got up in the head coach, the Texas A&M head coach's face, and started screaming at him.
Yeah, well, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, a rookie doing that's gonna be a real occasion in the pros.
Well, they say I was lucky enough to. Well, but I'll tell you one other thing I'd recommend is Art Donovan's book Fatso, which really chronicles the 50s. Art was a big man, and he was a funny man. I saw him work with. Was he working with Carson for a while? On the Carson show? Funny guy.
I don't know.
But Art had spent some time out.
Ah, by the way, the coach, Mark just did some research on the fly. Were you talking about John McClendon?
Yes, sir. Yep.
Isn't it cool what the Horn Family Commune does on the fly?
Yeah. Well, this is a bunch of people who I have such a respect for because of the brain power out there. I mean, I have not ever talked, and I do talk to some of the fellows occasionally. We'll go back and forth on the Horn ourselves, you know, and, man, I never fail to learn something. In fact, one of them was the guy who placed the call to send a medical crew over. He said, "Oh, you just didn't sound like yourself." I said, "Well, I get misguided easily. My memory is taking a hell of a beating." But yeah, my buddy coach played for McClendon, but then my buddy was driving a VW. And there's a spot in 271 where it runs into the Cleveland area. And it's a bad spot. Two people I know have rolled Volkswagens there, and he was one of them. And the VW in those days, safety belts? Are you kidding me? Nah. Hell, I figure eight spun.
Yeah, if you want to be safe, stay out of the car.
You got it. Well, the worst thing about the car was the heat wouldn't work in the wintertime, but, man, would it kill you in the summer? And I got a story that I have to tell you off the air because it mentions a famous female singer from the Akron, Ohio area because I met her and she rehearsed with me and then we did not hit it off. The only thing I can say was what got me, Bob, I had a sister at age 35 dying of ovarian cancer.
Oh, I think I know who this individual is, yes.
Yeah, well, I was telling my band members, I said, I may have to pull out of this for a while, and my mother's going to have some support from somebody, and I'm the only one left, you know? And, which, you know, I did. I quit playing for quite a few months and went back to it eventually, but, and I made a remark that the woman was kind of hippieing the whole thing, and, my remark was that there was a smell in my Volkswagen that resembled a boys' locker room at midterm, and the damn paper ran it. Whoops! But the woman has a brother who's a great sax player, and he bumped into me, and he wasn't angry at all. He said, "Bill, you're correct. she was flying so much, you know, she was so imbued with, and she's a great performer and a great singer.
Oh, yeah.
And really a nice person, but it just happened that that was a bad choice of words on her part because she hardly knew me to begin with.
Right.
If she was a lifelong friend, you know, there are people, people can say stuff to me that make, I'll laugh at them myself. I mean, I don't care, but it was, you know, it was just a bad thing to say because my sister and I were pretty damn close. 4 years difference between us. And my sister was a classical violinist, piano player, and a mezzo singer. And that was the real, you talk about two different musical individuals, you know.
Also.
Yeah, but you, you know, you hit it on the head. The whole sports thing has become a part of the bread and circuses. Sports talk I listen to because the news, the local news program as big as a Fox affiliation. You know, and I'm trying to eat breakfast here, you know.
Yeah, and the fact of the matter is there is no, realistically, there's no actual radio news channels anymore. It's all talk of one kind or another, and by one kind or another, I mean right wing or right winger. And so you can sort of tiptoe over into sports talk and maybe get a little bit less right wingery and a little bit less stuff that makes you want to throw, you know, throw things at the speakers.
It's amusing, if anything else. And, you know, these guys...
I mean, the best sports talk going on out there is Dan Patrick. You know, but then there are some others that are just...
I don't know how much money these guys are making either. I don't think the local guys are getting paid. Well, you know radio people better than me is what they're.
Well, I don't know, and I don't understand. I don't understand how the medium can support some of the salaries it pays. I mean, when you think about Rush Limbaugh making $50 million a year, how can you possibly sell enough Bose Wave radios to justify that? That's why I think that somewhere in the back of all that is a really, really, really long con. Hey, Bill, I got to roll, but it's been good talking to you.
Man, I'll talk to you. Take care of yourself.
All right, have yourself a good night. We'll talk soon.
Good night.
Bye now. Our buddy Bill, Mr. Stress, calling from Cleveland. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
What's happening, Tracy?
Well, I'm trying not to say it, but I'm having one of these I don't really like some white people say.
Well, you know, that'll happen. I don't like Boomer Esiason right now, so, you know.
You know, I take special needs kids home.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my students, the parent wasn't home. It just so happened that I left, but the aide was still there. And I get the phone call from the aide saying that the parent still wasn't there. So I, you know, call the school, blah, blah, blah. And I get a hold of the mom. The mom calls me and tells me that his babysitter is on his way back. So then my, told me to go back to the house. So I pull up there, and here's this white woman in a minivan questioning, the aide, who is a Hispanic man, and Talon is, the student is a young black, man, special needs, but he's really big. He's imposing. So he's waiting at the front door waiting to go in. And so the woman, I say, you know, is there a problem? Well, you know, I said, no, I don't know what's the problem. I said, this young man lives there. He's standing here waiting. He's his aide waiting for his mother. And she's like, well, I'm not profiling. I'm like, yes, you are.
The fact that she said I'm not profiling speaks volumes.
That's, I mean, because I'm like, why are you sitting here? What is the problem? Because before I got there, she was questioning Ventura, who is the aide. And she's like, well, you know. I said, no. See, here's the problem. I said, this young man is special needs, okay? Yes, he's large. I said, just because you see a young black man and a young Hispanic man in the neighborhood does not mean they're about to rob anybody. She's like, well, do they live? I said, yes, he lives there. Is there a problem? I said, because are you profiling me? Because I'm black. Okay. I'm his cab driver. Do you need to check me out to make sure I'm okay? Because did you think I stole the cab or something? Yeah. On top of the fact, somebody hit my car. So I'm just really annoyed today.
Somebody hit your car?
Yeah, and left and scraped my car, and I have no idea how or why or where. So other than that, I see her stalking. I just, you know, besides that, and then I hear about, you know, the Supreme Court being bought and saying that, you know, it doesn't matter how much money you put into an election, it's okay. So it's no longer for the people, by the people, other people. It's, you know.
Oh, yeah, that is also 1787.
Right. I think I told you that joke because some comedian said that senators and congress people should have to wear patches on their...
Yeah, like NASCAR drivers?
Like NASCAR drivers, so we know who their sponsors are. So we might as well move that over to the Supreme Court, and the justices, so they could put it on their robe.
Oh, this is... No, the McCutcheon decision is just Citizens United gone wild. It's Citizens United on steroids. And if you haven't seen it yet, I might as well go ahead and ruin your day. You might like to know that Charles Koch of the, you know, the Koch brothers.
Yeah.
Yeah, he published an essay over at Wall Street Journal today, explaining about how he's really hurt that everybody's being so mean to him because he's just trying to defend freedom.
Yeah, I saw.
So you already know.
I get emails from Daily Cause. And, yeah, and then they said their ad was right next to the op-ed, which is priceless. And so I went ahead and donated $3 to them just because I had to. Because I'm tired. I am absolutely flat out pissed.
Wore out and disgusted.
Yeah, I want to get a T-shirt. Yes, I'm pissed off. Why the fuck aren't you?
There you go.
You know, I think that's what our fundraiser for the Horn family should be. We should just go ahead and get these T-shirts printed up and wear them and sell them. And maybe when somebody says, "Well, what are you pissed off about?" and you'll get a conversation going, and then you go to end in the final words at the end of the conversation. Yes, I'm pissed off. Why aren't you?
The problem, I'm not naysaying this, Tracy, but the problem with this is that the people that need to change their minds are the people who are least able to.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, and they've actually done studies of the way the cognitive functions of people in this category. The more actual, concrete, factual proof you give to a teabagger that they are wrong, the more they retreat into their wrongness.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter if you're, like, in their face about it or if you're gentle and sweet and kind and you're trying to reason with them. It doesn't matter. They are so emotionally invested into this myth that they have purchased that says that they are oppressed, that the government is who is oppressing them, and that there are people in this country who are receiving preferential treatment from the government to their detriment, that there's, I mean, they're camped out there. They live there. They've got bars on the windows and locks on the doors there, and they're never coming out.
And they never, somebody was telling me, yesterday I went to physical therapy. Thank you, Obamacare. Because before that, I wouldn't have been able to go to physical therapy. I was talking to a gentleman there, and he had me, I guess, Jimmy Fallon, with the, you know, man on the street kind of thing, and
mm-hmm.
he asked people about Obamacare. And, I think it's all blah, blah, blah. Well, you know, and then they said, well, what do you think of the Affordable Care Act? Oh, you know, it's cool, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, well, you know they're the same thing, right?
Oh, that's charming.
He's like,
well, yeah, okay. that's along the same lines of the current, and we talked about this some last night, of course. You know, this trend now for the right wing to say, well, I mean, even though 7 to 10 million people have signed up for And they call it the Affordable Care Act now. They no longer call it Obamacare because the people that have it like it.
Because they work, it was working.
And the people, but the right wing is now saying, well, those 7 to 10 million people, they don't really exist. They're cooking the books. They're just making that stuff up. So today, and you've heard me talk in the past about how I get these right-wing show pitches, you know, from PR people wanting me to bring right-wingers onto this program, which, you know, ain't going to happen.
Oh, hell no.
Okay, so dig this. I got this shortly before airtime. Guest opportunity, Mark Davis, MD, nationally known media consultant. Really? MD stands for media consultant? Healthcare expert, physician, and author of three books, including Obamacare, Dead on Arrival, A Prescription for Disaster. And okay, so here's the pitch. While the progressives have stood by Obama and his healthcare plans through thick and thin, they are finally coming to the realization that it is time to walk away. The right has neglected to support Obamacare from the beginning, to no one's surprise, but seeing the progressive left abandon our president is surely a sign that it is time for Obama to make some changes, ones that might actually benefit the country. Huh?
Huh?
Where's that progressive abandonment of the Affordable Care Act? Because I try to keep up. And I know that we do, a lot of us, I'm one of them, would like to just see universal single payer for everybody.
Hello?
Yeah, but no, I mean, excuse me? Mark Davis can address this by answering the following questions. If progressives are always supporting Obama, why are they choosing to abandon his health care plan? Is anyone truly benefiting from Obama? If support is dwindling so rapidly, is it possible that Obamacare will soon be eradicated? You know, eradicated. What that word, eradicated. You know, like what happens when you've got a roach problem?
Or a Godzilla movie when they bring in the, you know, the nuclear bomb and eradicate, you know, Godzilla.
I mean, and again, they just make stuff up now.
It's like you know, this is what I have an aunt who is a habitual liar. Okay, I mean,
yeah, we've all got some. Yeah, no family's perfect.
She lied her way so much that it cut me out of my grandmother's. I got cut out of $250,000. That's how badly she lied.
Ouch.
But you know, huh? Yeah.
I said ouch.
Yeah, $250,000. Yeah, I think I could do some good with that. What you think?
I'm guessing the answer is a real easy yes.
Hell yeah. I mean, hell, you build a nest thing smoking out here to L.A. to do a talk. That's what I'm just saying.
Shrimp tacos for everybody.
Yeah, shrimp tacos for everybody. So my aunt, my other aunt, her sister used to say the reason why my aunt was so skinny was because she was running. She lied so much that she had to keep running around town to remember where she, you know, who she lied to and what she lied about.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
So this is, you know, except for that doesn't work for Chris Christie because he's a lying sack of shit and the weight hasn't come off. Ooh.
Ooh, yeah, you're mean.
When you hire your own lawyers to investigate you, come on. I got a clean bill of health. Well, Chris, you think the people that you hire are going to...
And I paid very well for it, too.
And I paid very well for it, too. Yeah, you got a clean bill of health because you paid the lawyers to tell you that you did no wrong. They say you did no wrong. And I'm sorry, again, it's one of those things where they make it up as they go because he didn't expect to ever get caught, okay? And so now he's doing the blame game. And say, well, why would – this is the part that tickles me the most about Chris Christie is that – he's like, well, why would anybody think that I would want something like that to happen? Because you're a bully, Chris. You're mean, and you're vindictive, and you're petty. So even if you didn't know anything about it, that just goes to show your character and how people perceive you. Am I wrong in saying that?
No, I don't think so.
I mean, I'm still getting ready to go to school and get my degree in psychology and So I don't know the ins and outs and all that about, you know, people think. But see, there's a lot of things that I am, and stupid is not one of them. But you don't need a degree in psychology to know when people are playing you. That's called common sense. And see, that's the problem, because a lot of people don't, you know, my mother used to say to people, you know, you got a lot of book learning sense, but you ain't got no common sense.
Mm-hmm. I've heard that.
And the common sense is what's going to keep you alive.
True. True.
You know, book learning is, you know, hey, you know, I am excited and altogether terrified also that I'm going back to school and finally pursuing, you know, I've finally figured out what I want to be when I grow up. And so it only took, what, 30 years, but hey, whatever.
You weren't in a hurry. Well, but we do know one thing, and I sincerely doubt that you ever really had much of an urge, but we know that you will not be going to Mississippi.
Oh no! I was going to call in yesterday, but I spent money, so that was better. When you were talking about how Mississippi wants to do what Arizona.
Yeah, the governor signed the bill today.
Right. And so I'm thinking to myself, what gay person wants to go to Mississippi on vacation anyway?
I don't know. Maybe a gay couple from Alabama?
Yeah.
Or Arkansas?
Or, you know, I'm okay. Yes, there are some times that I can be kind of pretentious, and I could be a bit of a snob. I can be when it comes to certain things, you know, when I make comments about the South and stuff like that. But, you know, I have family. Well, my stepfather's family is in Mississippi, so they're my de facto family. And they love it down there. But I have too many images of Mississippi in my brain that I would never willingly go there, ever. Unless there was, you know, Uncle Joe, who I love, is, like I said, my stepfather's brother, who's the only one of the siblings that stayed in Mississippi. All those other Negroes came out here, much to their detriment. But, and my mother. But, he lives there. And, you know, on that sad day that he, you know, he passes away, that would be my only reason to go to Mississippi. That would be it. Because there's no other reason for me to ever want to go to Mississippi. When you hear about the poverty and everything that's, you know, Mississippi's not up there like, ooh, you know.
Well, I just wanted you to know that when y'all get married, you can't order your cake in Mississippi.
I know. I can't order my cake. I can't. We can't go stay in the same hotel room, you know. See, but here's the funny part about all that is that since we're women, the chances are that we would not, I mean, Jan does look a little butchy, but I don't. So we could probably get away with staying in the same room without anybody even thinking that we're married, that we're a gay.
But you know what? I hadn't considered that, Tracy. What? No. This is real world stuff. And
yeah, and until
I have been to an event in Mississippi where people doubled up in rooms.
Exactly.
And it was and generally speaking, the way these events work, it's not they don't pair off some guy with some woman who, and they don't know each other. Generally, the women women go two to a room and the guys go two to a room. So is it presumptive now in Mississippi that two guys in a hotel room are trying to gay up the hotel?
That's my point exactly.
Because I mean, I've been in that situation.
Yeah, I was supposed to be going to a conference.
How do you handle this? Do you sign a declaration that you promise not to do any gay stuff in the hotel room?
Right. So when they have conferences, like you said, you went to a conference. So, like you said, if two men check into a hotel room and they're sharing a room, it's automatically assumed that they are gay. And how
right. Well, and you know, most of these hotel rooms now are non-smoking, and on check-in they explain to you that if you smoke in their room, $500 will be added to your bill for the extra cleaning.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in Mississippi now, are they going to explain that if they find out you've been homoing around in the room, that they're going to add $500 onto your bill to bring in the exorcist and ungay it?
Yeah, and so are they going to do a black light to check and see if there's any seed that's been spilled?
Now we're not. No. Let's not get all. Let's not drag a poor old Onan into this.
I'm just saying. I'm just see here again. You know, for example, my pastor. I got elected chairperson of Azania and the people of African descent at my church. We're having there's a conference coming up next month in Atlanta, and they wanted me to go. But, you know, my money, you know, right now, I can't really afford to go anywhere because of the wedding. And I really don't, you know, I don't want to travel too much right now or what have you. I just kind of want to just concentrate on getting my apartment together and getting ready for the influx of people who will be coming in and out of my house in the next few months. So, but they were going to offer to pay for me to go. And so I got an email the other day from Reverend Pat, and she's like, well, you know, we want you to go, and I want you to talk more to Pastor Neil about it, you know, and we could get you there. And I said, you know what? And just when I was listening to your show yesterday, and you were, you know, you had a filibuster going because of what's going on with, you know, everything that's going on in West Virginia, the question, and everything. So I sent my Reverend Pat an email. I said, you know, as important as it is for me to go to the, you know, the conference as a representative of our church, if we're going to use church funds, I'd rather the church funds be used to help bring my friend Bob Kincaid here to talk about what's going on with West Virginia. And
oh, wow, Tracy.
I wow. said because that, to me, so much more important than me going to Atlanta. And so that was more, so much more important than me going to Atlanta. And then I did it because they held the conference like every 2 years. And I said, and with that said, let's work on bringing the PAD conference to LA, considering that Founders Community Church, Metropolitan Founders, is the first church was the founding church of our denomination. And so my pastor and Reverend Pat fully agreed. So it is in the works.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Anything you need from me, just holler.
Right. And I, because, again, I have, you know, when you have life-changing experiences, when you get to that certain point in your life where you figure, There are so many more things that are more important than you'll ever be. And so more affecting. When you could do more for somebody else than it needs to be done for you. Am I making sense or am I babbling? Because I think I'm babbling.
No. You're doing fine.
Okay. Because I go on these tangents. But my thing is, have you guys gotten clean water yet?
Well, that's an open question. I mean, there are communities in southern West Virginia that haven't had clean water for decades and probably never will. Meanwhile, if you're talking about the water system in nine counties from West Virginia American Water, they've tested 10 homes, and all 10 homes still had some level of methylchlorohexane methanol in them. And just in the last few days, West Virginia American Water, almost 3 months to the day after the beginning of the disaster, finally got around to changing their intake filters.
Okay, so, and my point, and that was my email. I said, you know, I said with climate deniers, because like I said, I'm just listening to you, and I'm typing this email on my cell phone with a hell of a lot of typos, whatever. You know, with climate change deniers, and you know, this and that, and most importantly, what is going on in West Virginia still. Because like I said, last month, when I first brought this to Reverend Pat's attention, Sure, come on. Okay.
Hey, I've never been to El Segundo.
Okay. So, that's my point. I said it is so much more important to do this for you and my and get the word out. And like I said, I like the idea of what you were saying. Oh, can you open that door again?
Oh, sure.
What you were saying about having this as a, you know, everybody's writing their congressperson and their senator at the same time, flooding them with emails and, you know, having Brad, you know, he wants to interview you on his show.
Right.
And whatnot and so forth. So that's my mission right now. Well, I have two missions. You getting out here and speaking and Dr. Georgia Brew out here speaking about post-traumatic stress syndrome. So those are my two missions before the end of the year.
Awesome.
And I'm really working on trying to get you out here before the primary election in June, and if not, at least by before November.
Yes.
So, you know, maybe something could be done before the elections in November.
Right. Wonderful. Thank you, Tracy. It sounds like you've got some driving to do.
Yeah, I have some driving to do. So, like I said, you know, it's in the works. I'm a person of my word, and I'm working on it. So, with that said, I want to say hi to everybody, the Horn family. I love you guys. God bless, and hopefully we'll get this done.
Let's do, and then we'll get everybody together when we do.
Exactly.
Or at least everybody in the area.
Everybody in the area.
All right, Tracy, you take care and drive careful.
Always. Talk to you later.
All right, bye now. Calling from L.A., that's Tracy, the lady cab driver. Where are you going? El Segundo. Cool. Let's go to El Segundo. This is Thursday, Thorn in the Side Thursday on the Horn. We are 2.5 hours into the program, and we are kind of fundraising stuck at $10 for the evening. And I know James would like to have a few more friends on board for that. So if anybody wants to help out, well, that's the only way we keep all of this going, and there are perpetually bills that need paying. And that is an absolute fact. We've got $140 to go to meet the evening's fundraising goal. Any help would be monumentally appreciated. So where do we want to go in the last few minutes of the program? I got a lot of stupid here. This sort of dovetails with a story that we had last night. Remember the young girl in the third grader in South Carolina, Stan, who had the right-wing evangelical fundamentalist ruin her dream of seeing the Columbian mammoth declared the state fossil of South Carolina, as opposed to Strom Thurmond. I got that one from Irish Dave, and that was just a dandy. Well, remember the right winger who stepped in and said, "Well, we can do that as long as we acknowledge that the Columbian mammoth was created on the sixth day, just like all the other beasts of the field." Oh, brother. Well, not too far north. Apparently, there's this Carolina thing about crapping on little kids. And where they do it to third graders in South Carolina, they do it to sixth graders in North Carolina. And in this case, it was a little North Carolina sixth grade girl. Her name is reported as Lana Torres, and it's reported in the news, so I'll mention that. By holding her up as an exemplar to a hell of a lot of adults, not just in North Carolina, but all over this profoundly dysfunctional country. Lana Torres is a sixth grader in North Carolina, and she was among a group of students who got to sit in on a meet and greet with some political candidates that the sixth graders had hosted at the Greensboro Montessori School. uh-oh, political candidates, Montessori school, teabagger, this is not going to work out well. So, one of the candidates, is Rockingham, North Carolina, Rockingham County, North Carolina, District Attorney Phil Berger Jr. And sixth grader Lana Torres asked Rockingham County District Attorney Phil Berger Jr. how he would go about making sure that LGBT people have equal rights. Now, this guy's running for the Congress of the United States. He's running for the House of Representatives. So I will suppose that young Ms. Torres wanted to know how he would ensure LGBT rights, not only in that district in North Carolina, but in the United States at large. So she asks that question. And being a right-winger, and being an evangelical, and being an idiot, I mean, the people who get out of law school these days, Phil Berger Jr. answered Lana Torres's question. Well, let's go to the tape, even though it's not tape.
For Representative Howard Coble's seat, learned today to get that seat, they're going to have to go through our nation's youth. Case in point, students at Greensboro Montessori hosted eight candidates for the 6th Congressional Republican nomination today. Students moderated this event, even ran cameras and an audio board for the production purposes. The students were grilling candidates on several issues facing our nation, including education, funding, immigration, and gun rights. Wow.
Okay, so you've got the setup. So Lana Torres asks Phil Berger Jr. the LGBT question. And he responds, I'm not kidding. Thanks, Sal. Thank you very much for stepping up alongside James and helping out this evening. We really appreciate it, Sal. Phil Berger Jr. looks at sixth grader Lana Torres and says, 2 years ago, the voters of North Carolina overwhelmingly approved Amendment 1, which only recognized traditional marriage, and I was a leader in that effort. I was the spokesperson for traditional marriage in North Carolina, and I'm very much in favor of traditional marriage. And, of course, as we have noted in the past, whatever traditional marriage may happen to mean, whether that means having sex with your daughters after your wife gets turned into a pillar of salt, whether that means having a few hundred wives and a couple of hundred extra concubines, whether that means having the power as the father of the family to drag your wife out beyond the city gates and stone her to death, you know, traditional biblical marriage. Yeah. Then it got worse. Oh, Lord, yes, it got worse. Because Phil Berger Jr. is not the only idiot in attendance. We can get to the rest of that in a minute. When he was done talking about how proud he was to be a supporter of traditional marriage, Phil Berger Jr. went on to explain to young Lana Torres that gay marriage is like when a man marries a dog. Really? young Miss Torres was interviewed, and she said, he talked about a man marrying a dog. I found that really offensive that he would compare gay marriage to something so offensive and outrageous. Oh, Dan Savage. Hi, Dan. It's time to redefine. It's time to redefine the meaning of. It's time to redefine that definition that used to be the definition of Santorum. It's time for that to be the definition of Philburger. Man on dog burger. Wow, that sounds real icky, doesn't it? Well, I'll have the man on dog burger. But apparently this whole thing was a real train wreck. Another candidate, was asked about global climate change, which the sixth graders understand is real because it's their future that's being screwed up. And he announced that the world is not getting warmer. It's getting colder. I think we need to be getting ready for a new ice age. Not a joke. A new ice age. That was a candidate by the name of Sutherland. Meanwhile, there was the reasonable guy was a cat by the name of Phillips, also a candidate for the same congressional seat, who asked about the toxic, deadly coal ash spill at the in Rockingham County. Said, I think we all share an interest in protecting our natural resources, but accidents do happen. We have to protect the environment. But we got to take care that the government doesn't encroach on the rights of companies, because they're people too. Mr. Phillips is also a flat taxer. Enter Philburger, who answered the question by saying, the EPA looks to punish individuals and businesses for acts like these, and we need to pull back on the reins of the federal government. And went on to explain that he'd like to see the EPA dismantled and regulatory control passed over to the Congress. Because after all, we wouldn't want to punish poor little old Duke Energy for poisoning the water and killing every living thing in it, and passing their poisons on downstream to other people to get the drinking water out of there. Now, would we? Man on dog. No kidding. And thanks very much to Jack for helping out. That takes us to $35 for the evening. That means we've got only $115 to go for our evening's fundraising. Thank you very kindly, Jack. That is, after all, how we keep all of this going. Ha, 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 Irish Dave. Them burgers ain't so tasty, but they're real filling. And he also asked, so Jesus marrying up with all them nuns is traditional? That's about as traditional as you can get. And thank you, Thomas. Thank you very kindly. Thomas has helped out this evening, as he did last night. And that takes us to only $110 to go for the evening. That's wonderful. Thank you. All right, one last thing before we close the program, 21 minutes before the hour. Did you I've got a couple of instances of this story over at headonradionetwork.com. You can scroll down and find them. Did you hear about the smog wave affecting England and Northern Europe? I think I even posted some raw video from Reuters, maybe, over at headonradionetwork.com. This is like video from China. You can't see across the river. The video of Hamburg, Germany. You can't see from where the shot is taking place to across the. You can't see. It's obscured. A combination of a massive Sahara dust storm mixing up with European air pollution has blown toward the UK and Northern Europe and mixed with more of the pollution in the local regions, such that air pollution alerts have been issued in places like Hamburg and in places like London. London today was shrouded in a vile, thick, greasy, yellow smog. So bad that schools were instructed to keep children indoors during recess. Or around here we say recess. And elderly people were warned against doing strenuous outdoor activity, as were people with lung and heart conditions. Yeah. Now, here's how bad it got. In the UK, there is something called the Department of Environment, Food, and Rural Affairs, DEFRA. And one of their jobs, and I'm sure if we had something like that here, it would be under attack by the teabaggers and the right wing and the birthers and the deathers and the tenthers and the booger eaters and the igamfoos and what have you and the Republicans and the birchers. But they've got a job of measuring outdoor air quality and issuing air pollution standards on an easily comprehended 1 to 10 scale. On Tuesday, Norfolk hit 10. This morning, in London, the DEFRA scale hit 9. And the DEFRA scale is comprised of a combination of ozone measurements, nitrogen dioxide, sulfur dioxide, and then a little something known as PM10 and PM2.5. Yeah. PM stands for, not Prime Minister, but Particulate Matter. And PM10 refers to particulate matter that is of roughly 10 microns in size, whereas PM2.5 refers to particulate matter that is 2.5 microns in size. These are standards that, among others, are followed or measured, when they do measure them, by the EPA here in the United States, PM10 and PM2.5. As a rule, the smaller the particle becomes, the more dangerous it becomes. But you'll notice there's no standard for PM0.5. And that is why I'm bringing up this story this evening. A particle of 0.5 micron in size is referred to, and we've talked about these in the past, is referred to as an ultrafine. And if you heard, for instance, or viewed the lectures given by Dr. Michael McCauley, my good friend, the scientist from West Virginia University, who is one of the foremost authorities on ultrafine particles on planet Earth, you know that at the ultrafine level, we're talking about particles that are the size of a virus. We're talking about particles that are so small that they can pass through the cell walls, individual cell walls, and whose effects are so dangerous and so destructive and so pernicious that you can have, you can see it happen. Dr. McCauley has told me in the past, you can see it happen under the microscope. A cell will be affected or will be breached by an ultrafine, and 10 cells away, another cell will start mutating. And yet neither the United Kingdom nor the United States has an ultrafine standard, or in many instances even acknowledges their existence or the danger that they pose. And this is the real irony of for instance, one of these pollution alerts in a place like London or Hamburg. A reading high readings of PM10 and PM2.5, and the visibly obvious. And it's aesthetically unpleasing, and it doesn't smell good. But what is visibly obvious, the obscuring of the view, the smell of it, the notorious London fogs of the 19th century that were generated by coal-fired processes. What it turns out that the stuff you can see is not nearly as dangerous as the stuff you can't. Where ultrafines are concerned, it is truly a case of what you can't see, what you don't know, can hurt you. The clouds of stuff, eh. But the stuff that's so tiny that it can get all the way down into the alveoli of the lungs and can pass through the heart-lung barrier, and for pregnant women, can easily transit the placental barrier. That's where a lot of this damage comes from. I happen to have learned a good bit about ultrafines by virtue of what Dr. McCauley has taught me from his research regarding mountaintop removal and ultrafine particles. If you should happen to be somewhere that has air quality problems, whether it be somewhere in China, whether it be somewhere in England, somewhere in Germany, or somewhere in the United States, or God knows, let's say, Mexico City, you might want to go over to ACHEACT, ACHEACT.org. And you might want ACHEACT.org. You might want to then click on the tab that is called Ache Science. And when you do, you will see a whole bunch of studies that have been done regarding the effects of mountaintop removal upon the communities in which people live. There are articles there about ultrafine particles. You know what silicosis is. It's what happens when you breathe fine particles of silica, often resulting from the blasting or destruction of, well, sandstone. But these ultrafine particles can be found in other environments as well. What was it referred to? Brown lung in the textile mills, and those were plant fibers. There's a lot of different places where the industrial processes of this country and others have absolutely ruined working people's lives and shortened them. We learned about occupational pneumoconiosis in West Virginia by virtue of Union Carbides having decided to drill a tunnel in order to create hydroelectric power through Gauley Mountain, which was almost 100% sandstone. Gauley Bridge, West Virginia, became known as the town of the living dead, and most of the people who died were African Americans. It was the 1930s, so they were mostly the grandchildren of slaves. And they died officially by the hundreds, and unofficially and more likely by the thousands. And so when it says that the pollution affecting Northern Europe and London is in part from other European air pollution, well, some of that's going to be diesel. A whole lot of the damage that comes from ultrafines is from ultrafines coming off of diesel exhausts. But it's also coming off of coal plants, because there are a lot of countries in Europe that still burn this most filthy, toxic, and deadly of substances. In point of fact, the EU is at present engaged in legal action against 17 out of 28 of its member states for air quality ruination, violations. You may recall even that it was last month when the air pollution got so bad in Paris that they tried to alleviate it by eliminating some of the cars operating on the Parisian streets. According to the World Health Organization, in dealing with these particulate matters, a reading of more than 300 micrograms per cubic meter of PM2.5 is considered hazardous to human health. Imagine what that standard would be if we had a standard for the really dangerous stuff, the ultrafines. And understand, when you see stories like this, whether it be of the rampant air pollution in Chinese cities, or Mexico City, or London, or Hamburg, or Paris, these are episodic. London's geography means that from time to time they'll have these events. In the forgotten sacrifice zones of Appalachia, these are not episodic events. They are daily events. The blasting usually takes place at about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And after the blast has been set off, the dust goes up in the air, and then, like a fog, it boils down the side of the ruined mountain and boils down into the holler. Through the holler, it boils off the edge of the MTR site and over the community. There are photographs, and I'll try to see, eventually you'll be able to see some of them on ACACT.org, of entire little mountain communities with just what looks like fog settling over them. And that is the dust, the toxic, deadly, ultra-fine particulate matter-laden dust of mountaintop removal that doesn't happen once in a while because of a convergence of meteorology and geography, but happens every damn day. Imagine a place where American citizens are deliberately poisoned every day of their lives in punishment for having the temerity to live on land that their people have been living on for 8 and 9 and sometimes 10 generations. Imagine that. Imagine being a mother-to-be and breathing that stuff and knowing, as we do know now, that there is a 140% greater chance of this non-smoking mother-to-be who's breathing this filth giving birth to a baby with respiratory birth defects than there is for a mother-to-be who smokes but does not live near mountaintop removal. Imagine that. That's in America. That's in Appalachia. That is every day. And so that is why every evening, as the program closes, as I will right now, I will implore you to please go to acheact.org, acheact.org, and click on that tab that says Ache Science, and read these scientific papers, and understand what is being done. And it's been, and remember the other night when I was talking with with MSNBC and Don Blankenship, was there, and that sociopath with the pencil thin mustache said that, and we went over it Tuesday on the video. Not just coal communities benefit from coal, but all of America does. Remember, there's mountaintop removal coal in the electricity generated in the United States and most anywhere you are in this country. Click, the light comes on, there's mountaintop removal coal involved. So for those who aren't as familiar with the program as perhaps others, understand what is being done to real, live, honest-to-God, American citizen human beings in Appalachia every day of their lives is being done in your name. In your name. Because we're told that you have to have electricity, or else human beings would freeze to death in the dark. According to the World Health Organization, there were 7 million premature deaths worldwide from air pollution in 2012 alone. Some of those, probably not that many, but some of those, maybe about 4,000 of those, were in the mountaintop removal sacrifice zone of Appalachia. And wouldn't it be worthwhile to stop those 4,000 excess deaths? What if we could? What if there was a law waiting in Congress that only needed your action, your activity, your determination to make it pass? That's why there's acheact.org, and that's why there's an ache campaign and an ache team, because the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Bill, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act, is in the Congress. And we're busting our butts to get it introduced in the Senate. But it won't happen without your help. So go to acheact.org. Click the Take Action tab. Send yet another communication to your member of Congress saying, why haven't you signed on? Because it's the only way we're ever going to end the Appalachian apocalypse. So thanks, everybody. Thanks very much for joining in this evening. Thanks for the help you've given in keeping us on the air. We will start the program tomorrow with $260 to raise for Friday on the front porch. Thanks to all of you who helped keep this going. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to John Fox, to Ben Birch. Thanks to Coal River Mountain Watch. And always, 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 Gina. It's all for you. Rick Smith is next on the Horn.